with the September 7th Health Human Services and Housing Committee meeting. Call the meeting to order. Can I have a motion to approve the August 3rd regular meeting minutes? Legislator Uchitel, second. Legislator Erner, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Unanimous. The first thing we have on the docket is a presentation for the Department of Aging. So Susan, are you running the PowerPoint yourself, or is Jay?
Jay's going to let me be co-host or let me share my screen, and I'll be happy to do that.
Great.
Am I ready to do that?
You should be good.
All right. Let me get this from the beginning. Okay. Oops. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Great. All right, I am going to go through this quickly. Let me just give me a slideshow, please. Okay, here we go. So there's our address and our phone number. this is something I use to introduce people in the community to what we do. It's just a brief overview. And during the course of the presentation, you'll see some of the flyers that we have for people and the different information that they have in them. So if they want flyers or they want information, they know where to find it. And this particular presentation is certainly welcome to be shared with anybody who needs it. So it's really, we haven't been around for that long. 1973 Older Americans Act founded all of the Office for Aging's around the country. And my guess is they probably founded them out of necessity because people were living longer and older adults may not have had family be able to take care of them at home. They had fixed incomes. A lot of them had pensions, things like that, but not enough to make them rich, but too much to make them qualify for Medicaid. So we take care of people who are not qualified for Medicaid. These are folks who are lower income seniors. They mostly are on Medicare. Most of them have worked all their lives and they have either pensions or Social Security or both. And we also take care of disabled folks of all ages. We get a lot of funding through NYSOFA, which is the New York State Office for Aging, who in turn gets federal and state money through a lot of different titled programs. And this is our mission statement. This is how we live our work. We make sure that everybody can stay at home as long as possible, be as independent as possible. And we have a lot of help, a lot of partner organizations that can help us. And some of that grant money goes to New York Connects program, which is a resource program all throughout the state. Our county is not an exception that gives people a lot of direction and help of where to find services that they need. Things that we provide that I'll go into briefly, we do provide some transportation. We provide some legal services. We do not do a lot of different legal services, although that is a popular thing that we offer. We offer home delivered meals, community cafes, which we call congregate meals, a lot of health promotion activities, nutritional counseling, case management. Therein lies the part of the wait list that we talk about a lot. A lot of social and educational events. Part of the case management includes the PERS unit, personal emergency response, home care, including level 1 and 2 personal care aides, and case management and the home delivered meals. Those are all part of the case management. For free, you know, some of these things have cost shares and some of them don't. The HICAP program does not. That's the Medicare counseling program that's going to be very popular soon. A lot of volunteer activities. I talked about New York Connects. Myself and Mike Iapochi and a number of other people are on the Older Adults Empowerment Council that we use. Several of our staff see a lot of other different communities and sit on a lot of different groups throughout the community. And we also have a small but mighty respite and caregiver support program through a couple of different contracts. So I'm going to show you our flyers just because it helps me remember what to tell you. I'm not going to read them, but this is our general flyer and it talks about all the things that I've mentioned, some specifics about what people might be interested in, the numbers that they can call, the mission, different websites that they can find, different questions that people call and ask a lot. I think our most popular questions are legal and Medicare and home care requests, I would say, off the top of my head. And this general brochure gives a lot of information about what we have and what we can offer that most people ask for. So I mentioned all of these, and these are things that people ask for a lot. And all of these programs are always humming and busy. We try to keep this brochure up. This is long-term care services that are both in Ulster County and around the area that people might consider. So when people are aging out at home, I'm going to show you the inside. These are the home health agencies, some of whom we have contracts with, and the adult homes and assisted living that people might explore, the nursing homes that are both in Ulster County and if you see here, there's several around either in Rhinebeck or Dutchess County or in Orange County that are relatively close by where people might want to go. So people ask for this a lot. You also give them the information here about the other services, but you know, when people are ready or their family members are ready, we share this a lot. We do, as I mentioned, we have 6 contracts with licensed home care agencies. Off the top of my head, I would say they're A&T, Anytime, Home Health Care and Companion, Hudson Valley, Unlimited Care, and Will Care. And I'll talk about the AIDS situation in a minute, but just so you know that we have contractual relationships with a lot of these places. We also have familiar relationships with some of the nursing homes that we do work with. I want to talk about home care because I want to talk to you about my wish list at the end. I was a home care administrator twice in my life. The first time I ran a home care agency that was called a Lombardi program. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that, but in the early 70s, this guy came up with this program design in New York State that allowed people to stay home who were nursing home eligible, meaning they scored nursing home level eligibility on a PRI, if you know what that is, patient review instrument, that's how you get into a nursing home. But they kept them at home at 75% of the cost of the nursing home. It was a great model. And the Lombardi program also was called the long-term home healthcare program. And those were blended into all the MLTC programs that became what we now have for the Medicaid patients. So they were Medicaid and Medicare patients. And ever since then, I would say that home care has become more and more of a struggle. And right now, there aren't enough aides for anybody. So we have a lot of people on a wait list because we cannot get them aides at home. Some of the people do not need full-time care. They need someone to help them bathe a few times a week, or they need personal care. We have homemakers on staff. I think I've talked about that before. But they don't bathe or dress people. They don't touch them. And it's really bad in home care right now. We send out 30 or 40 requests a week for cases to be covered, and nobody responds because they don't have the aides. So I'm not going to belabor the point. This is something that's happening all over the country. There's a lot of reasons. I have my own opinions, but I don't think it's a very well-respected choice of career. And I don't think that people who love to do it are very well respected in the way that most agencies deal with their aides to begin with. They don't get a lot of benefits. They don't get a lot of paid time off. They have to pay for their mileage. They're driving all over the place. So anyway, there's a lot of issues with home care right now. And that's part of the problem with our wait list that I can't fix. Okay, back to our flyers. Our legal services are in demand. She has like a 2-month backup. I would say we did increase her hours a few months ago, and that helped a lot. Our lawyer mostly deals with living wills, healthcare proxies, guardianship advice, powers of attorney, and she helps people with those types of documentation and can consult on Medicaid applications and things like that, but she does not litigate and she does not go to court. Those are the things we call Hudson Valley Legal Services for. She's wonderful. She's a great lawyer. She knows her senior law stuff backwards and forwards. And she comes in here twice a week and she has appointments in the office. And this is the description. Again, we do ask for a contribution, but if they cannot afford it, we don't pressure them. We also talk about the legal services of the Hudson Valley, who have a much more extensive array of things that they can offer people. And then we give them the numbers of other things that they may need, crime victims, you know, dispute resolution, things like that. Oops. Another thing that people call us a lot about is Medicare counseling, because somebody turns 65 every day and you need to know how to apply for Medicare, even if you have to defer it, if you're still working, and your Social Security, even though there's no Social Security office here anymore, there's one in Poughkeepsie, there's one in, I think it's Newburgh, and there's one in Hudson where people can actually speak to Social Security staff. But there's a lot of things that the Medicare counselors do. They know their stuff. They're trained every year throughout the year to help people. It's all free. To help people apply for and also change their plans during open enrollment, which starts mid-October. So HICAP stands for Health Insurance Information Counseling and Assistance. It is funded through the federal government. And also there's something called Extra Help and the MIFA program, which is for even lower income seniors. This is going to allow in 2023 to help a lot more people, because the income level that people have to have is going to be a lot higher, and it's really going to help a lot more people for the Medicare savings program. It will pay for their Part B premium, and it'll help with some of their Part D drug costs. So the MIPA program is really important as well. And our HICAP counselors talk about EPIC, which is the New York State Elderly Pharmaceutical Insurance Coverage Program that helps a lot of people too. We get a lot of questions about housing, senior housing. There are a lot of senior housing places in Ulster County, but there aren't enough. There's Kingston Housing Authority runs some of these. RUPCO has a big list of people all over the county that they manage or own. So we list all of those, and we also list as many housing guides as we know about where seniors could probably find a place that's relatively affordable. And for instance, some of these places are privately owned, and they were bought up, you know, for whatever reason, but they do keep it low income seniors and disabled folks. So we keep that up to date. We do offer transportation programs. We do not drive people around. We are not a taxi service, but we do try to give what we can. We have a volunteer driving program called Neighbor to Neighbor, N2N. And we also pay for a full-time staff member at UCAT to drive our shop. We call it a shopping bus, but people can take it for medical appointments and shopping. It's like a door-to-door kind of thing, and also on the fixed routes as well that the bus offers. And those are the two main transportation options we have. We have a few people who drive on their own, but I don't know about that and don't really want to know about that. So people just have to register for UCAT, and they can take their bus and if they need a ride. And it's all about the service, and all the UCAT vehicles are wheelchair accessible. They'll go right to your property. I don't think they'll take you off your porch, but they will help, you know, get you on the bus. And they have a medical van as well. This is the neighbor to neighbor flyer. Again, I talked about that. That's just volunteers. We do pay them mileage. to go, and we have people coming into the office through our volunteer program that I now coordinate, who make all the scheduling and the dates of everybody's requests if they can. So that's a neighbor to neighbor program. It used to belong to the RSVP program, which used to be at the, I think it was at SUNY Ulster a long, long time ago, when we sort of accepted all those programs into the OFA. I talked about a little bit about dining programs. We have home delivered meals, which is part of the case managed service through Gateway Community or Gateway Hudson Valley. They changed their name. And they also serve us meals at congregate dining program sites around the county. There are currently 5. We'd like to add one in Woodstock because they've been asking us apparently for years for that. And they have a need there. So the folks get 5 meals a week that they can heat up and a pantry bag, which has some shelf stable meals for themselves. And at the community cafes, they can eat together. There is no income requirement for those programs, which is great because food should be available to everybody. And our hub is doing well. Our Ellenville site is doing well. The other sites are ailing a little bit ever since COVID. They just really never popped back, but we're working on it. And I think the Woodstock site will be pretty popular if we can get that going. And we talk about what happens in the sites. It's just come in, eat lunch together, sit around and talk. It's a great program if people are interested in something like that. They don't have to make a contribution. We ask for it, but they don't have to. I talked about volunteering a little bit. We have a lot of places where people could volunteer. Mostly they're volunteering as drivers. They work at food pantries. They make warm calls to isolated seniors in their home right now. They used to be at places like hospitals and museums, but a lot of those aren't accepting volunteers still. I wish they would. Libraries, they read for children, things like that. those are some of the other places where we placed volunteers. Ombudsmen, some of them come into the office, and a lot of them are AARP tax aid volunteers or Medicare counselors. Those are all volunteers. Let's see. Other programs that people are interested in are evidence-based programming that help people manage their lives better. We teach chronic disease self-management classes. We teach Tai Chi for arthritis. It's a beginning class. We offer something called Bingo Size, which is a new evidence-based program that combines bingo, education, and exercise. Matter of Balance, which also helps people for fall prevention. We do a weekly walk at the mall. We do exercise classes at various places, mostly at the hub right now. We do bingo all over the county as often as we can. We have picnics. We have holiday events. We have movies at the Rosendale Theater 4 or 5 times a year. We have lunch and learn events a couple times a month where they hear about a lecture about something that might be relevant, and we offer them lunch. We have a craft session every month now. We have free education from our dietitian and our diet tech. We offer tax help during tax season. We have a lot of connections to other senior groups that can give people other education that we may or may not have. During the pandemic, we did a lot of registration online for seniors who didn't have access to the internet or couldn't figure it out. We have a lady who helps people with their tech, their laptop or their new iPhone that they can't figure out. I just refer people. She's great. She just takes everybody. our New York Connects folks also help people with important applications such as HEAP. During the heating season and the cooling season, and also SNAP, they help them with Medicaid application, all sorts of other guidance, all sorts of questions that come in here. And I think that's it. Any questions? It was a brief and quick.
Thank you so much. That was really great. And I could say for myself, I really learned a lot and appreciate all the work that you're doing. Maybe you can bring the stop sharing and then we
okay,
can.
Yep.
Questions.
Yep.
Great. So I see Legislator Lopez first, and then we'll start with you, Legislator Lopez.
Yeah, thanks. What's the vetting process like, the background check for the neighbor.
So we have a contract with Jewish Family Services for that program. And when somebody wants to be a driver, we send the application to Jewish Family Services. They actually have a contract with Identigo, which is a background check company. They do a background check. They check their license. They check their driver record. They check their license. They check their inspection. They check their registration. So they are vetted by Jewish Family Services as much as you can be, I guess.
Okay.
They
don't do like a criminal background check?
Yes, through Identigo, that's a criminal background check. Yep.
Got it.
Sorry if I wasn't clear.
Thanks.
Legislator Nolan, did you have your hand up? Or did I imagine that?
I think you
Thank
did.
You, Chair Walter. I had my clapping hands up.
Oh.
Because I the services through the Office for Aging are really wonderful. And I get lots of compliments on them. I refer constituents there all the time. And it was a lovely presentation of it to bring it all together. So really appreciate what we offer to our seniors here in Ulster County. And really like the idea of opening up a cafe in Woodstock. That community events in Woodstock are very well attended overall. And so I agree with you, that'll likely be a very good site.
And there's a lot of people in Woodstock who are aging in place. They don't want to leave. I don't know if you know anything about Woodstock Home Share, but I'm on their board, and they're trying to get this home share program going there where people don't have to leave their homes, and they share their home with somebody else who's maybe younger or working in, and to help them out either with chores or money or rent or something like that. So it all sort of ties in with what we're trying to do in Woodstock. There's a lot of people in Woodstock who never worked for the government, never, and will not be eligible for Social Security, are not eligible for Medicare. So they don't have money, even though they live in Woodstock. So keeping all that in mind, we thought the easiest thing to do to get in would be to start a congregate site there. I will stress to you that we are not an emergency service. We cannot stop what we're doing and put an aid in somebody's house. It's a very rare thing. We have a wait list. We're working on that. I think that Eve had asked me what my ideal look would be at some point, and my ideal Office for Aging would that we would have enough case management staff to sort of handle the wait list quicker, because we're always going to have somebody waiting to try to arrange. It's just not something that can happen overnight. And I would love to have a solution to this aid problem. One of the ways that we've partially solved the issue was hire our own homemakers. The county's able to give them paid days off. They put them on a salary. We had extra money in several different funds where we were able to fund these without any kind of county money. It was all through the ICEP and the unmet need grants that we get from NYSOFA. And we have three of them. And that almost handles our need for homemaker services, which is the lower rung of that kind of need. But the other part of it is the personal care part. You know, I think you need an RN. You know, Dr. Smith could sort of, you know, answer to this, but every county once upon a time had its own CHA and its own licensed agency, and they don't really have those anymore. But the RNs used to oversee the aides. It was a county function, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, that's sort of an ideal. It really deals with the case management of that. That's the one part in our agency that I feel like we're not able to, well, besides transportation, but I, like I said, I'm not a taxi, but, you know, that I can't satisfy the needs of the folks who are here and aging out in Ulster. It's a big population and it's getting larger.
So for the 2023 budget, have you put in a request for increased case management, perhaps personal care RN? Have you put in any of these requests?
No. The one thing that I put in for the budget was the creation of another New York Connects staff that would offer almost at least part-time evidence-based programming that I eventually would love to take that type of programming to the managed Medicare companies and make them pay me for it. So it would be a revenue producing center. And the Offices for the Aging in New York State is sort of expecting us to do that, although they've kind of backed off of it a little. It's called, I can't remember the name of the program, but I'm in a caucus with four other OFAs around me, you know, Putnam and Orange and Dutchess and Rockland. And we're all sort of gearing up for this. And I would love to go to the managed care company and say, look, I have an evidence-based programming thing for you. And you have constituents who have fallen, or they've had a broken hip, or they've gone through a rehab in a nursing home. They need this program. They need to make sure that this never happens again so they can live at home safer. And that's what it's for. And if they save money in a hospitalization in a nursing home, say, I think it would be well worth their time and money to pay us to do this.
Right. So, and that's all great, and it would be terrific to have
the case management part. That,
however, let's just go back. So, I mean, have you identified how in your to function perfectly, how many more case managers you would need?
Yeah, I think Mark and I talked about this a while ago. A few years ago, I had written you a memo which probably added up to over $1 million that I would need for maybe not that much, but it was a lot of money to be able to answer the need fully, because it included case management and it included AIDS, the whole thing, like my own AIDS, my own case management.
Well, it would be wonderful if you're willing or interested in sharing an up-to-date idea of what more you would need to operate at full functionality, so that we would not have such a wait list for these. I mean, this is a group that doesn't really have time to be sitting on a wait list. To say
I don't disagree with you at all.
And have you had any recent conversations with Dr. Smith on the idea of utilizing RNs? I know for myself, you know, I have many thoughts of having our own kind of RN workforce for several reasons, but this would certainly be one of them. Have there been recent conversations?
No, I haven't had a conversation with Dr. Smith or her nursing director, because I felt like this wouldn't be a great timing because of all the COVID issues that they've been dealing with over the past 2.5 years. The nursing staff has been, you know, running around like crazy since the beginning of the pandemic, and I get that. And they've been making home visits, and they're dealing with the you know, immunization sites and all that. But I would love to have a conversation about that, because I feel very strongly as a non-nurse that even though the regulations in home care allow, not in home care, in the OFA world allow for a PCA level 2 to work for us directly, PCA level 2s have to have certain things to satisfy their certification every 2 years. And that's my other hat that I used to wear. They have to have in-service training. They have to have supervision. They have to be able to go to a nurse to say, I have this issue that I don't know how to deal with my client here, or they have a tube, or they have a Hoyer lift. I don't, you know, I can't remember how to do this or whatever. They just need someone as a resource. And I think a nurse, an RN, would be the perfect solution to that.
Yeah. But, so I guess I would ask, in addition to understanding how much more, what kind of staffing in terms of case management would be necessary, also just have a sense of this RN position, whether it's a part-time, a full-time. And you know, I think that this is the time to explore whether there's room in the budget to look at these types of programs. I think this is a highly vulnerable population and an important one. And I think the work you're doing is important, and the idea that anyone who needs it doesn't get it is a problem for me. So, you know, if you are interested in pursuing what it would look like to request, you know, understandably there is an RN shortage, so you might request an RN and not fill it, but I think that's the secondary problem. The first problem is whether you'd actually be attributed a line. And I think this is a conversation personally worth having with Dr. Smith on having your office have access to an RN for these needs. As you said, it saves a lot of money because when these patients are hospitalized, to have somebody follow up with them for transition of care immediately could end up keeping them out of the hospital and you know, get them healthier faster.
And the hospitals want to do that too, because they get charged if somebody goes back in. I actually think the more ideal situation for this is to have an outside agency contracted as an RN.
Well, that's kind of what we're stuck with anyway. So.
Yeah, I know. I mean, because they can offer all of these in-services and trainings that we would have to almost become a licensed agency to be able to do that.
No, absolutely. But right. I think, you know, Deputy Executive Ryder, this is an important thing for us to look at as to what our possibilities are. But I'll open the floor. I know Legislator Erner, you had some things you wanted to talk about, correct?
Yeah, thanks, Chair Walter. And Dr. Kubenhaver, thank you so much for the presentation. I learned a lot. What age do you start serving the people of Ulster County?
60.
Okay. And where can we get those pamphlets that you showed us?
Whenever you would like them, I'll be happy to send them out. I can do them electronically or in paper or both.
Okay. That bus I see parked at Development Court a lot, what do you use that for?
So that was actually established many, many years ago by a three predecessors ago. She was a nurse. And they used to take that out into the community and do health screenings. They would do finger sticks. They would do blood pressures out into wherever they did. We did take it once to New Paltz, to the Aloha Acres campus or whatever you call that, kind of off the beaten path there. And we brought the lawyer, we brought the high cap, we brought New York Connects. And the whole idea was mobile county government. We're doing it anyway through the general government, but this would be OFA services. Inside the bus, there's an audio booth, there's a huge sink that needs to be removed, and then we'd have enough room inside the bus to have two kind of meetings going on. So that's my dream for that bus. I had a friend deconstruct the audio booth, but it's so heavy that he can't get it out of the bus. And then somebody needs to kind of destroy the sink. So that's why it's over there. We did drive it though, and it did work, and we thought it was cool, but it needs some inside work to make it work better.
Okay, thank you for that. My last question is about hospice. The Circle of Friends for the Dying gave me a tour of their facility under construction here in District 6 recently. Do you maintain a list of hospice services, and what's your relationship like with hospice providers around the county?
Well, there is one hospice provider per county, and that's the Duchess and Ulster Hospice. And Circle of Friends for the Dying, I know about their house that they're building, and I think it's a wonderful idea. If people need a referral for that, the New York Connect staff know who to get a hold of and who the numbers are that we refer to them. We're not home care, we're not nursing homes, so we don't do anything but make referals.
Thank you very much.
I have another question. How do you satellite what you do across the county? Do you have set times that you are in different locations, and is that information easily available so that, kind of like DMV, do people have that ready access to Office of the Aging?
No, what we try to do is I don't know how much my predecessors got out to the outer edges of the county, and I'm specifically talking about the Route 28 corridor and Wallkill and down there. My understanding is that they didn't. Not a criticism, it's just they didn't. So I've been recruiting people for the advisory council board who live out there, who live in Big Indian, who live in Pine Hill and High Mount. And then I've got some people from Wallkill. and Napanock and Ellenville down there to bring them into, to let us know what kind of needs they are, they have, and what they're looking for. So we've been trying to focus on bringing services, information, lunch and learns, and just our general presence as much as we can to sort of those outer areas of the county for the last couple years, as much as we've been able to. And it's been working. We've had several visits to Pine Hill, which is a really busy, vibrant community center out there. And we're trying very hard. I've been out to Wallkill a couple of times in the last few months to bring information for them. Apparently it was the first time we've been down there, and we're doing some fun things and some educational things for them as well. So it's not like a set schedule like the DMV, although that would be great with that bus, you know, when it's usable. Problem with the bus is that you have to be CDL certified to drive it. And I am not, and none of our staff is. So that's another thing we have to deal with. But the point is that even though we don't have a bus to drive around in, we make sure that where we're going is covering as much of the county as possible.
So that's another thing I think we need to really talk about. I know that I've heard definitely from a needs assessment I did down in Ellenville that many of them feel like they don't have access to the Office of the Aging. And I've heard this in other places. And you know, there has been these conversations of how do we satellite county services, especially this one, really across the entire county. And I think we need to think of some more innovative ways, even if we associate it with the DMV truck van. But, you know, I think that having some ready, like knowing that on Tuesdays, those people in the Northern Corridor have an Office of an Aging person they can go to, and knowing on Wednesdays down in Ellenville there's a person they can go to, I think it'll certainly be utilized. Go ahead, Deputy Executive Writer.
Yeah, I mean, we have done some of that with mobile government. We don't get, I think part of the issue is that the communication with the residents is not as great, and so we don't get a really good turnout at those events. And so we need to do a better job of using you all, especially to help get it out to your constituents. We have started to follow the bus so that people who use the DMV bus can also go inside the building wherever they're at and use mobile government services. But it is a program that has been started this last year. Started right before COVID. We took a hiatus, and then Laura Nordstrom has been reactivating it the last few months. So the fact that we don't even know about it that much here gives me pause that, like, we need to communicate that more for sure.
Yeah, especially for this one, because this is a population that can't easily travel and get to
community. Exactly.
Legislator Erner, did you have another question? Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Not the end of the conversation, but the beginning of the conversation. You know, I think that we're in a place right now in our county that if there is a time to really explore enhancements that are necessary to better serve our constituents, this would be the time. And I would say from my point of view as a legislator, don't feel shy to talk to me or any of the other legislators about what you really need. And we can see what we can do about helping you get it.
Appreciate that.
All right.
Any questions? If you need stuff, I'm happy to send you anything electronically, like I said, or in paper. If you want to have a supply of what we have to further. By the way, just so you know, we have a newsletter that comes out every month that has all this stuff in it. We have 2,700 plus people on our mailing list. We distribute about 2,500 copies around the county everywhere. We send it to some of the senior groups. So they, again, kind of amplify it to all their folks. So we do get the word out. And I'm surprised to hear that about Ellenville, because that's one of the places where we're down there a lot.
I'm aware of that.
Like, programs. And we have a congregate site there twice a week. We do lunch and learns down there. I went to the hospital for a couple of different, I'm on their rural health network board with their grant going on down there. So I am surprised to hear that, but
Yeah, whatever. I think it's the difference between having the programs there and having people know when and where they are. And I think that's what it was more communicated about.
Not I just need more, like, how do I get to these folks? I have a good in with the housing down there, the Healthy Living folks. They're very helpful when I need something.
I assume you use the libraries.
Yes, right. Yeah, we're having our public hearing down there October 6th. They're very good, too.
All right. Well, you know, I think there are ways, just like people figured out where the DMV truck is, we can figure out anything else. But thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
We're going to move on to the rest of the questions.
Thanks, all.
Thank you. So resolution number 139 has been withdrawn by the sponsors. I'm going to ask Vice Chair Lopez to take the next resolution, please.
Sure. Yep. We will. There's a resolution 200 setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 7, amending the code of the County of Ulster in relation to evictions. I get a motion for discussion.
If I could jump in, Deputy Chair Lopez, I don't know if I'm happy to motion it for discussion, but I'm also happy for there to be not happy. I accept that there, I'm not pressing for action on this tonight. So if you want to take no action, we could just move on. But if you want to take an action to postpone it, I could move it for discussion.
I think we would have to move it and second it. And then
so I move it for discussion.
We have a second.
Second.
Okay. And your request is for no action.
Yeah, no action or a postponement. This is still, the appeal is being heard for the Albany law. And I also think we still don't have a full ethics board to navigate the landlord question.
Sure. Okay, Legislator.
Thank you, Deputy Chair Lopez. In this resolution, there's some language around an exemption for housing that's incidental to employment. And I just wanted to highlight that because I've heard that discussed in some other county legislative committees recently as we try and tackle this housing crisis. And I know from personal experience how vulnerable a person can be whose housing is incidental to employment. So I just want to urge us here in the legislature to, whether it's in this particular resolution, if we end up moving forward with it at any point or further business we conduct around that, I am not a big fan of the public lending support to company housing, if I will, and I'm happy to go over further reasons why if that discussion continues. Thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you, Deputy Chair Lopez. I think that given the current ethics board statements that we should take no action. And so I think we should move on.
Okay, then. Well, per the request of the sponsor, we will take no action, and I will hand this back to the chair.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me finish my hamburger. So next we have resolution 340, ARPA food security and access. Motion to discuss. Legislator Erner, second. Legislator Nolan, discussion. So I have brought up the question. I recognize the chair's meeting was all of yesterday and that this may not be available for us now. The one question was, I definitely appreciate the change where the money is going more towards delivering food services rather than studying the delivery of food services. I think that's great. I guess the one question was related to how it's going to be determined and defined as to who's getting targeted, how much are they getting, what is it, you know, just sort of the parameters of that, of the RFP, so to speak, or I guess it will be an RFP, to these food serving organizations, or is it more like, we know exactly who all of them are, and we're just going to help every single one of them? Which I don't have a problem with, but, you know, I don't know how you pick one food serving organization over another necessarily. But so I don't know, Deputy Executive Ryder, if you have anything to say on that.
I'm going to have to follow up. I believe that that's what the contract through Ulster Corps is about, but I can follow up with the ARPA team and with Deputy Kelly.
Okay. Legislator Nolan? Sorry. Go ahead, Dennis.
I'm sorry. I apologize. The discussion and the way this works and what we sort of try to model it after is the continuum of care work that's done for homeless housing. And what you end up doing is you bring the folks, the providers together, and you work with them so that they establish their own priorities. So it becomes self-regulating and an understanding works like that. And then the group gets together, and if there's any conflicts, you try to work those conflicts out by consensus. And that's the way we've done work with respect to the COC. And we think that it's a good model, and it sort of, what it tries to do is to try to put the most needed priority being established by those folks that essentially have boots on the ground, with some indication that you have a moderator in the room to make sure that happens, and a robust discussion moving forward in terms of making sure that it happens. And one of the things that we're talking about is, in order to get them in the room, is to essentially say that if you're not in the room, then it's not likely that you're going to get funded. So that's the carrot to bring them into the room.
Well,
what is Ulster Corps' role, Dennis?
That's Ulster Corps' role. That's correct.
Bringing them all together.
So it's not so much a competition. It's going to be a collaboration and figuring it out. That makes me very happy to hear, because I would hate for these organizations to be competing with each other, so to speak. All right. Legislator Nolan, did you want to follow up before I go to Legislator Erner?
Yes, I've had some conversations that headed in the direction that Director Doyle gave us more detail on. So that's my understanding as well, that it should be serving essentially everybody by trying to serve those in most need first and then working back.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to see the change here to make Ulster Corps the organization we're going to work with. I've worked with them on the farms I've worked at, and I'm happy about that. I'm going to support this.
Okay. Any other questions? Oh, go ahead, Dennis.
I sometimes staff gets lost in some of these discussions, and I just want to give a lot of credit to Amanda LaValle for, you know, taking in the work that essentially were the comments from the legislature and restructuring this program and doing a lot of outreach. There's been a substantial amount of outreach on her part, and I just want to give her credit for that.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. All right.
That is, in fact, the person that I had spoken with. So thank you for bringing in the name, Dennis. Appreciate it.
So all in favor of resolution number 340?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. It's unanimous. Resolution 414, authorizing the right to cross the right-of-way owned by Ulster County for the Ulster-Delaware Railroad Corridor, near mile point 4.8. Motion to discuss. Legislator Uchitel, second. Legislator Nolan, any discussion? Legislator Erner?
Sorry, have we got the amended version that the, it looks that like in the packet here, but do we need to move to
They've already made those amendments, so we don't have to make a motion. We could just approve it as it is. Jay, where is the? Didn't you? You got us the updated one, right?
My mute game is so strong I couldn't find the unmute button. But my apologies. In one of your resolution packets, I believe it was the one with backup, you had the correct version, and I omitted the correct version from the one that was attached to the email. So what you see on the screen is what was adopted in economic development and in half of your committee materials.
Thank you.
So to clarify, is the resolution that we had in the packet, I didn't see any strike-throughs, but I didn't see most of this language. So do we have basically the accepted changes version is what we're looking at?
Right. You have this version in the OneDrive materials that included the giant PDF with the backup information.
So no, so it's not the accepted changes. It's this one. It's just that there's two different places you can look. And if you look in one, you'll see it. And if you look in the others, you don't. But so these amendments have already been accepted before presented to us.
But the version that will go to the floor is the version we're looking at right now?
Exactly.
Okay.
Without us needing to make any approval of an amendment because it's been done.
Right. So when we vote on this, we're voting on the amendments already incorporated.
Yep.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. All in favor of Resolution 414?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, it's unanimous. Resolution 432, establishing a policy to dedicate the surplus revenue received from Ulster County real property. Motion to discuss. Legislator Erner, second. Legislator Uchitel. Okay, discussion? Legislator Erner?
Yeah. So I put this through as seeing that, again, we are needing to invest to deal with this housing crisis. And that's really just us. This just commits us to taking the surplus from auctions and putting it into different types of things that will hopefully help keep people in their homes. Build new housing, both for emergencies and for low-income folks, and that would be affordable. And the one-third, one-third, one-third was just mathematically easy, but there's not any real further analysis that went into that, I admit. And I'm happy to answer questions or hear any discussion.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you, Chair Walter. I like the thrust of this. I have a couple of concerns. One is that a policy locks us in, and this is for three options. I like flexibility to maneuver as situations change. I also didn't think that the third was appealing to me here, because I thought directly providing housing, either emergency housing or more long-term permanent housing, is far preferable to me than investing in the anti-displacement efforts. Those are valuable and can be needed, but I don't know. I guess I just feel that if we invest in the housing, then we don't need the anti-displacement efforts as much. So it's going more to a root cause. So I guess the questions I would have are, you know, should we have discussions maybe in this group or others about committing this percentage of that surplus money to this general area? And I think the answer for me on that is yes. And then the second question is, do we have this right, or would it make more sense to say, reserve 10% or 25%, maybe even the third, for other efforts? But those could be determined whether, if we have some permanent housing opportunity in front of us. I would hate for a policy to be committing us to the money in the anti-displacement work. So I guess, as I'm saying this out loud, I guess I would even be happier not specifying between permanent housing and temporary emergency housing, because it would give us some flexibility to meet those needs rather than the policy saying those monies go here every year. That's a, you know, you can always change the policy, but I don't like creating a policy with the intention that we will need to change it.
Okay. Others? Deputy Executive Ryder.
My only, this is the first time that we're seeing this, and I would just say that given there's not going to be an auction until, you know, first quarter of 2023, I would ask that this be postponed. I think it's a great idea. I share some of Legislator Nolan's concerns on specifying exactly where it goes, and I'm sure the administration can figure out a way to work with Legislator Erner in something that works for all parties and this committee. But I mean, obviously it meets the moment. We're in a housing crisis. And so I applaud the efforts. I just think we should have a little bit more thought in creating the plan.
Thank you. Dennis, is your hand up?
If I may, yeah. Chair Walter, appreciate it. I just want to echo Mark's comments, Deputy Executive Ryder's comments, because I think it does meet the moment, and it is something we need to think about. I would go back and reiterate the concerns from Legislator Nolan. We're looking at other things that we can do relative to housing, and sort of putting the money in a box may not be the best way that you want to think about this. The other things that we're talking about, and one of the things that is in the housing action plan is the establishment of a housing trust fund. And so moving this money generally into a housing trust fund and then deciding how to spend it on depending upon that moment that you want to spend it, something that the legislature wants to consider. And certainly we could work with Legislator Erner relative to those kinds of thoughts. But the thrust here is essentially to try to find a way to fund a housing trust fund. And that would be one of the ways to look at this. And I would applaud that effort as well.
Thank you. So I would just say I completely agree with what everyone else is saying. I support the intent behind this, and I've always have. I will say that, for example, the first resolve is kind of in action already, because we put out an RFP for eviction services, and next month you'll hopefully be having that resolution to fund those services. So I would agree with Legislator Nolan, the specificity here, I don't know if we're ready to agree on this particular specificity. I do like the idea that Dennis brought up of sort of allocating a fund. I know that when I put out the resolution several years ago for the Airbnb, and I wanted to allocate a certain amount of money towards housing, one of the criticisms I got was, where was I allocating the funding towards? There wasn't a thing. And so by creating a thing that we could be allocating money for, I think would be great. I also think it's important to have a conversation with the executive's office in terms of what other uses are already coming from this money, because you know, there some of this money also pays for DSS and Office of the Aging or other, you know, perhaps. And so how much of this we want to utilize, I think that's an important, we don't necessarily want to take all of this revenue and allocate it directly without a conversation, because, you know, it did come in a million more than it was estimated, but it wasn't, you know, and that's nice, just like sales tax. But again, it's not like these revenues aren't a part of our overall bucket that we utilize to provide the services. So I would want to just a better conversation about what that amount really should be. Deputy Executive Ryder.
Yeah, I just want to bring up the point that this year we had kind of the perfect storm of both an influx of people who wanted to buy these properties. We went online so people from New York City could participate in the auction. We had 2 years of auctions that were up. We don't typically see a surplus like this. So, in fact, many years we don't even meet the total amount of back taxes. So this is not going to typically be this huge pile of cash that we can spend on other things. I think that's why it's more important to, you know, set it aside for housing or whatever we decide to do, but not completely dictate to where it goes.
So Legislator Erner, on that, you had suggested that you were willing to postpone this. Is that true?
It is true. I'm happy to move that we postpone. And if I could also make a comment after we, if there's a second for that.
Okay, second, Legislator Nolan. Do you want to make a comment before we vote, or do you want to?
If I might, Legislator Ushetel have something to say, though?
No, I was just trying to second your motion.
The second.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the feedback so far, and point taken from the executive. That is the first time you're seeing it, so I'm happy to work together with you. And thanks for sharing your preferences, Legislator Nolan. I do want to say that for me, our body, whether or not our body addresses displacement, to me is actually, it feels much more urgent to me than we have really been acting. It may not be the fundamental issue, but it is what is affecting the most people that I know right now. And we need to do something. It's not enough to commit to build affordable housing. It's not enough to establish emergency shelters. We do need to do that, especially for the people who have nowhere to be. But there are people who are on the verge of having nowhere to be that I feel as though we're doing very little for. And promising to build something that may even get erected even as soon as a year, these folks are going to be out of Kingston, out of Ulster County. That's been happening. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that passing this resolution along right now would stop that. But we do need to really be acknowledging that people are being forced out for reasons of money. And if we have access to money or some other resource that can prevent that, then we should be doing that.
All right. Thank you. So all in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? Okay. Unanimous. Thank you. It's important conversation, and let's keep having it.
Chair, if I may, my apologies to the committee. I have to jump off. I have an executive committee.
Can you stay on for one more? Can you stay on for the next one? Because we need you still.
Okay.
So the next one, Resolution 461, adopting revised Ulster County fund balance policy for dedicated funding for housing justice. A motion to discuss. Legislator Ushetel, a second. Legislator Corcoran. Okay. Discussion. Do you want to start us off, Legislator Ushetel?
Yes. I will say I think the conversation that we just had is a perfect segue into this. So this, I view this as a moment of excess in the fund balance. We know that this is the fund balance has to be dealt with in for a variety of reasons, but at the same time that we have a fund balance surplus, we also have this immense housing crisis. I think that philosophically we're all aligned that that's where a lot of this money should be spent, and a lot of the details of my resolution here, 461, are probably already being fulfilled. This really ensures that we set aside a significant portion of the fund balance money. Although I would say it's perhaps not significant enough, I thought about going more aggressive with this and decided to stay at 25%. This does not specify what types of housing, what types of anti-displacement, what types of policies are put in place. The existing legislative process would would still be, in place. This is really just defining the lower threshold of how much of the excess surplus should be spent on housing programs, and allocates a portion of the current surplus to that. And I think this is particularly important to pass now, because we do have, we know that we will have a new county executive coming in. So this sends the message from the legislature to the incoming administration that this is something that we expect to keep providing resources for. This sets aside those resources. And I think it, I think it's philosophically where we are, but really just lays out the structure of it.
Thank you. And so, Dennis, since you do have to go, Legislator Nolan, do you mind if we kind of give Dennis a chance to talk about anything you're concerned about, or anything that just to get your input on this one?
So, again, I'll go back to the idea of the expectation here. The expectation would be is that you can try to, when you start looking at the sums of money that we're talking about, we need to start to think about the implementation of that money. And the idea of putting it in something, I want you to think of some of these things like ARPA, that effectively what you end up doing is you begin to look at these, that these are accomplished over time, that somehow between now and next January, the ability to spend millions of dollars on housing is going to be difficult to bring up and move forward. But the idea of essentially a commitment to spend millions of dollars on housing is not going to be difficult to do and to move forward. So if you think about this like you did ARPA, that we want to see these things essentially obligated by the end of 23 and spent by the end of 25 or something like that, that gives us all an opportunity to start to really think things through and get it right in terms of how we spend the money, make that funding transformative. And it also gives us an opportunity, I think, to do those things that Legislator Erner is really concerned about, to make sure that if there is a crisis, we can put money towards it. And the example I would give you is in the COVID issue. We took not a substantial money, but we took about $200,000 of our CDBG funds, and we put it to landlord assistance to basically pay the rent for those people that were behind. We paid up to 3 months rent for those people that were behind that could prove that they were impacted by COVID-19. And those are the kinds of things that you can think about, making sure that people stay in housing, which gets the legislators' earners concerned that some people lose their jobs or lose their ability to pay for housing. We have rapid rehousing programs. Those are types of things that you can begin to think about. But the idea of funding this in this manner and starting off with a bucket of money that you can move forward makes a whole lot of sense.
Great. And so just to clarify, is there any language in there that you feel does not do what you just said would be the way to go?
The short answer is that if we have issues, we can work them out. I'm not concerned about any specific language. This is a resolve in terms of policy and where we're going to go, and I'd like an opportunity to move through and comment on it if we have to. But the idea that where we're headed is not one that I'm adverse to.
Okay.
More importantly, I would be supportive of it.
Okay. Was that what you were going to ask, Legislator Uchitel?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify
Sometimes
if that was a comment
Dennis
in support.
To translate for Dennis.
Yeah. Sounds like he's supportive.
Deputy Executive Writer.
I guess, if you don't mind, this is just a question through you, Chair, to Legislator Uchitel. I guess I don't understand the strike through where it says, if it is determined by the Commissioner of Finance that it is not possible or prudent to adequately adjust the value the assigned fund balance to the succeeding year. I'm not sure why we're striking that in trying to get to this policy. It's in the fund balance policy itself. That's
it's page 4 under Roman numeral 4 policy statement, the fourth paragraph.
It could be something that was already struck in a prior. I don't think so. I think it happened in this meeting or in this resolution, but.
So if the the sentence then begins 25% of any unassigned fund balance above the maximum allowable threshold shall be assigned and used to pay for affordable housing as defined herein. It's just that when you get the strike through, you're beginning the sentence with a percentage. So it took me a while to figure out, but I think that's what it means.
Well, there's still the paragraph starts with an unassigned fund balance above the below. I worry a little bit about taking some discretion. I support using the fund balance for affordable housing. Looks like we're taking all discretion from the Commissioner of Finance, which gives me a little pause.
Legislator, you should tell. Do you want
to? Yeah, I don't think that this is an area where we're saying we're leaving 75. I think one way to read this is that we're leaving 75% discretion in coming back to the, because this in plain English is, you know, the fund balance policy requires the Commissioner of Finance to come with a plan for how to address the excess. And this is saying that, well, that plan can include 75% of the excess, but 25% has to be for this fund, and that's an automatic thing. That's my read of it. That's what we're trying to achieve here. If you feel, and counsel on your side feels, that is not achieved by this, I'm certainly open to adjusting it to ensure that that's what we're achieving.
I mean, this has to go through laws and rules anyway, so maybe you can
work. I'd rather make those changes there. I would love to see this pass out of this
committee. You have the language that you would want to change it to? Didn't know if you felt ready at this moment.
Is that a question to me?
Yeah, on whether you would like time to review this
language. I don't need time as far as anything stopping this committee. I think it can be dealt with in laws and rules. I do want to go to the county attorney and maybe legislative council.
Is that we could vote on it as is, knowing that in laws and rules, all those, you'd have some time to make those tweaks and amendments.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I just need to do a little bit more deeper research before laws and rules.
Okay, that's what I was assuming, is that you wouldn't want to right now at this moment decide how to restate this or suggest how to restate it. Legislator Erner?
Thank you. I had a couple of questions for the sponsor through the chair. There's a whereas that says the comptroller's fund balance report dated July 7th, 2021 had 54 million. Is that the right year?
That might be an error. It's yeah, if that's meant to be 2022, then we can fix that.
Okay. And I think there's a typo that I could either mention here or offline that says residents with a C, and it should be a TS, I'm pretty sure. Let me see. I had another question.
December 31st, 2022 hasn't happened yet.
Oh, that's a good point.
It was July 7th. You're right. Okay, thanks. Yeah, okay. So maybe switch those years in those two paragraphs.
All right. So you can take, I think the small edits you can work on with Legislator Uchitel. Let's just talk about bigger picture. And I will say I was wrong. So this isn't laws and rules, it's ways and means. But that still gives time to, we can make the amendments there. Legislator Nolan?
Yes, thank you. My focus was on that same paragraph in the policy statement, Roman numeral 4, the 25%. I like this resolution for the flexibility. I think a quarter is a good number. But affordable housing is defined herein. It might be worth checking in with Director of Planning Doyle to see if we should include that housing trust as a place for this, or whether that definition includes everything we want it to include. It does include emergency housing, which I think is really important. And it gives a bucket of all the things we want to do. And to the extent that anti-displacement efforts include helping people meet unpaid rent, I'm very happy with that. I thought that was more targeted towards legal defense, which can also sometimes be needed, but sets up a more of a conflict situation. So I'm happier with it going to help paid agreed upon rents than.
So are you asking that it, that rather than it go to something called assigned to affordable housing, that you're asking for it to go towards the housing trust?
No, I just would like the sponsor to have those conversations with Dennis Doyle and planning, since I thought there were some helpful ways of thinking about it, and decide with that information what we want it to be. I'm happy to pass it out tonight with the notion that that would all happen, and if there are going to be changes in ways and means, they'd come to us on the floor.
Okay. Did you want to respond to that, Legislator Uchitel, or? I move to legislator.
No, I like this conversation, and we can address all of these things before the Ways and Means meeting. Thank you.
Legislator Erner.
Thank you. In the definition of affordable housing, it seems circular to me at the end of where it says programs designed to increase the availability of affordable housing, but we're in the process of defining what those would be. So I'm wondering, can we say that differently, or can we say what we mean in that case?
I would say that's definitely something that we can look at before.
Just strike available. I mean, affordable.
Yeah.
So programs designed to increase the availability of the housing for Ulster County residents.
Okay.
And yeah, I guess I think that I would love, Legislator Uchitel, for you to spend some time also with Dennis Doyle on just that specificity of the purpose, that one sentence, because I could also say for myself, it is protections for those who are harmed by the crisis, but it's protections for also those people. Maybe it's not a housing crisis, but they have bad landlords, or they have, you know, there's, we want protections, not just because of housing crisis, but always to have protections. And so, but I think that sort of the purpose of resolve, getting that sentence as, you know, specific as possible, you know, specific and general as possible, I think is, I would love if you would work with Dennis on that. Dennis?
Yeah, and just to give you a sense.
Legislator Nolan, did I interrupt you? Did you have? No. Okay. Dennis, go ahead.
So just to give you a sense of sort of the buckets that you can think about is, you know, sometimes the ability to essentially influence the affordable housing is you're not funding the housing. The example I would give you is sometimes you can fund the road to the housing. You can fund the infrastructure, the water and sewer to the housing. Those are the types of things that you can intervene on that will help move the housing bucket forward. So I would not say we're doing this generally, but with a bird in hand, a project in hand that basically wants infrastructure, the county could fund out of a housing trust fund infrastructure. And you can think of a housing trust fund divided into buckets, just like you divided ARPA into buckets, divided into those buckets. And then you can start to think about what the interventions look like to make sure that we don't end up with people homeless. And then you begin to start to say, we're not only talking about the supply of housing in terms of adding additional units, but we're also talking about interventions so that people essentially don't end up being homeless because of something that happens to their housing situation. And you can think of that as lost income. You can think of that as raising in rents. Those are the types of things that you can target portions of a housing trust fund for. And you can fund various portions of it. You could fund only the addition of housing with respect to this money. You can fund, there's going to be other types of things that you think about. And not to preview in terms of our discussions with respect to the budget, but we've advocated in terms of looking at the amount of surplus that was available to us, we've advocated the formation of a housing trust fund and funding a housing trust fund in as part of our discussions with the budget office.
Thank you. Deputy Executive Ryder.
Just two quick points, and Dennis's last point. I mean, I think it was part of the release for the inflation relief plan, but we talked about adding $5 million in that trust that helps with both the purchase of property and infrastructure. So I think this goes along well with that. And, you know, I applaud the doubling of the effort. I do think the definition of affordable housing does include the catch-all at the end where you struck out the affordability or the affordable wording, but that would encompass everything that Dennis just talked about. And I think keeping this simpler and having a catch-all phrase like that, I think is probably best.
Thank you. Yeah, so a lot for you to think about, Legislator Uchitel. The only other thing I want to add, just for your thoughts, and this may not be for us this year, but for next year or the year after, is we want to be sure that there's a good amount of money for housing work, even if the fund balance isn't high. And so how do we make sure that we actually are allotting money towards this housing trust on an annual basis, whether it comes from the fund balance or something else? I don't think it needs to slow this process down, but I think we need to recognize, like, this may not always be the resource it is, and we wouldn't want to lose the efforts because of the lack of money, excess money in the fund balance, especially because if we do this, then we may not see any excess in a future year, and then what happens? So, yes, Dennis?
So one of the things I think that we've been cognizant of and is that exactly what you talked about. And if you remember last year's capital program, there is in a capital program something called a community development fund. So if you don't have money in the operating budget or in a trust fund, the idea that you can actually help in some way, shape, or form with respect to housing by using a community development fund where you can bond against it is the other thing that we're looking at. So this, it's just not one tool. We're looking at a number of tools. And the bonding issue would help us with respect to work on infrastructure. Similarly, like we used to bond for some of the economic development work, you could bond infrastructure for housing.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else on this? So recognizing that there'll be amendments made at either the first or the second Ways and Means, depending on how quickly you get to it. All in favor of, I've lost track, Resolution 461?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so it's unanimous. Resolution
just 4. For clear, as a point of order, was it unanimous?
I don't think, was there an opposed?
Okay, I wasn't sure. Great, awesome, thank you.
I guess I abstain? All right, yeah.
Okay. No, no one needs to, I didn't hear anyone abstain. Sorry, thank you.
Yep. Next, we have Resolution 439, confirming appointments of members to the Community Service Board. Motion to discuss. Nolan, mm-hmm. Second. By Dennis Erner, any discussion? All in favor of Resolution 439?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, unanimous. Resolution 440, confirming an appointment of a member to the Ulster County Youth Board. Jasmine Kay. Nolan, second. A second, Erner. Any discussion? I'll say I think Jasmine Kay is amazing. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Resolution 441, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Office of Victim Services for Victim Crime Act. Motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Nolan, second.
Motion.
Corcoran, any discussion on this one? Legislator Erner.
Just a typo on the third to last financial impact, in anticipated rather than in dissipated.
Are you sure? Do you see that? Is that correction noted by whoever needs to note that correction? Good, thank you. All in favor of Resolution 441?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? All right, unanimous. 442, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget to accept allocations of pandemic emergency funding for Department of Social Services. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Corcoran, any discussion? All in favor of resolution 442?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, unanimous. Resolution 443, approving the execution of a contract for $100,000 for Industrial Medicine Associates for DSS. Motion to discuss. Nolan, yeah. Second. Corcoran, any discussion on this? Legislator Erner? Did you have a discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Chair Walter. I'm getting to it here. It's on page 194 of the complete packet. This mentions the County of Dutchess, and can the Commissioner of Social Services comment on the reference to the County of Dutchess here?
I cannot, Legislator Erner. I don't have page 194 in front of me. I'm not sure if one of my colleagues might be able to respond to that. I see our contracts paralegal, Amy Borden, waving her hand. Amy, could you respond to Legislator Erner, please?
Sure. I don't have the packet in front of me, but the reference to Dutchess, I assume, has to do with the fact that we piggybacked off of their RFP. So we just make reference to that as our source of procurement.
Thank you.
Okay, any other? All right, all in favor of resolution 443?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, unanimous. I get a motion to block 444, 445, 446, and 449, which are all transportation for DSS. Nolan, a second. You should tell. All in favor of the block?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. A motion to discuss? Please. Nolan, second. Erner, any discussion? Legislator Erner?
I actually would have rather taken these separate. I'm voting no on the block. The reason is I just would like to hear separately a little bit about the rates. I see Bernie Bus, for example, is down a bit for the new contract, and I see they cover Ulster, Orange, and Dutchess counties, it looks like. Matt Bus is down a bit as well. They cover Green and Columbia, but then the third company, which takes folks to Dutchess and Orange, their rates went up about 6%. So either way, do we know what's going on with these rates? Is there any reason that some went down, another went up?
Sure. I'll have our Deputy Commissioner of Children and Family Services, who previously oversaw the early intervention and preschool program and has intimate knowledge of all of the rates, which are essentially state set. And the differences, I believe, are because of the regional subtleties. But Rita, could you please respond to Legislature Erner?
Sure. So originally, Bernie and Matt, both companies covered all the areas because of busing issues regarding drivers and vehicles and Bernie's ability to meet our need. We had to go back out last year and do another bid for the Orange County area and the Dutchess area, and Orange County Bus picked that up for us. They won that bid. So they have more money because, of course, the rates increased when we went out to bid for that. And then these are all now based on approximate numbers that we have and where students are living, along with the increase, the CPI increase from the state transportation department under state ed.
Thank you for that. I have a follow-up, if I might.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Is there any consideration being given to the possibility of bringing any more transportation services in-house?
We don't have school buses for the county. We need to contract that out. We would need our own bus depots, our own buses, our own drivers, training. We would never be able to afford that. It's a whole nother unit.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So all in favor of the block of the, all the resolutions?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. All right, it's unanimous. Next, we move to resolution 447, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $455,315 for Liberty Resources. Nolan, second on discussion. Uchitel, any discussion? All in favor of resolution 447?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. All right, it's unanimous. Resolution 448, approving the execution of a contract for 79588, also for Liberty Resources, Department of Social Services. Motion discussed. Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Uchitel, any discussion? Legislator Erner.
Thank you. I have the same question here as I did before about the buses. Is this sort of service something that Department of Social Services could handle in-house or not? Or what would it take to do so?
Commissioner, I don't know if you're the right person or...
Yeah, I'm going to have Rita Wood respond to that. Sure. Thank you.
So the intensive family therapist, it's a specific training that they go through, very much similar to the MST unit. And we don't have staff that are trained for that. They're specialized in their education and the ongoing continuing licensing and evidence-based program that they provide. So it's specialized, and it would service a certain population to make sure that they hopefully do not go into the criminal justice track through JD, juvenile delinquency.
Okay, thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you, Chair Walter. Picking up on Legislator Erner's theme, maybe at a future meeting, we could discuss where in the offices throughout the social service and sector, we could bring things in-house and where those are large programs that would be very difficult to start up, staff, and go on. This committee as a whole has expressed an interest in having more services provided through the county if possible. And so having that discussion maybe after the budget season so that we could really look at it and say, where would it make sense? I think might be a good way to approach that.
Yeah, I don't know if you need to wait for after. This might be as good a time as any to think about removing things in house because yeah. We haven't approved anything yet. But
yeah, fair enough. So maybe as part of that budget process.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to consider doing that. And it's something that we do carefully evaluate and taking into consideration a lot of dynamics around qualifications, education, licensing, current job titles that exist in the civil service structure, as well as what we're facing in terms of just vacancies and staffing issues right now. I think across the entire spectrum of human services, we're seeing difficulties filling vacancies. So I'm very appreciative of the support that's demonstrated here about potentially exploring opportunities to bring in projects or initiatives or existing work that we outsource. While at the same time being mindful of some of the challenges that we would have to be able to meet to accomplish that, it's clear this committee has demonstrated all year their support for trying to create the opportunity for us to do those types of things in-house and to do it with Ulster County providers. So thank you.
Great. Any more questions on this or comments? All right, so all in favor of resolution 448?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Abstain? All right, unanimous. Resolution 450, approving the execution of a contract of $979,241 entered into the county for LaSalle School, Department of Mental Health. Motion to discuss. Legislator
Very
Nolan.
Happy to move it.
Second, Legislator Corcoran. Discussion? Legislator Erner?
One typo I found on page 334 of the complete packet under item F, Roman numeral 9, it says extra circular interests I believe that should be curricular.
Okay, others? So I had several questions. I support the overarching goal of this project. I've had many conversations with Commissioner McDonald and Deputy Executive Contreras. I have several concerns still remaining that unfortunately we had a small window for me to express them, and a small window for me to hear answers and a small window for me to respond. I'll just outline a few of them. One, which was brought up in the chair's meeting, is sort of this confusion of whether this is ARPA money or not ARPA money. And it was an understanding that it was ARPA money, but it had never gone through the ARPA committee. And so somehow that got missed. That's a small thing. It's going to be put onto the ARPA committee. But yes, I thought it was, but apparently Vicki checked and it never had been. In terms of the specific project, I'll just express the concerns that I laid out for Commissioner McDonald and Deputy Executive Ryder. So first of all, the scope of services state 100 youth, and if that divides by 5 schools, that's 20 youth total. I know that there was a message saying it would be 400 youth, but that's not what the scope of service. The scope of service is 100 youth. So that's 20 youth total if each dyad has basically 2 schools where Kingston counted as 1, then we're talking 10 kids a year. And so that makes me wonder, why is this number such a low number of kids being served? It also says for 3 to 6 months, with the estimate that it'd be more like 3 months, which I was wondering if that's really evidence-based, that all of this kind of comprehensive care could truly be achievable in 3 months. I wanted more information about the logic behind choosing a 3-month time period. There are 2 people serving these 20 kids at a time, so it doesn't seem to equate to a full-time job. I would like to see the details of the budget of how this is broken down, because it's $800,000 worth of salaries. But if 2 people are seeing a total of 20 kids, it seems hard to understand how this turns into a full-time position. Other questions, like if there's only 10 kids at a time, how do you make sure that those are the right kids? What is the reasoning and rationale behind that, as opposed to just making it available to a larger pool of kids? So I feel like it's a lot of money to spend for very few children served. And seeing how caseworkers, I don't know the average number of kids in a typical caseworker at DSS, but I'm guessing it's more than 10 in a year. And so, I recognize these are high needs, but so are the caseworkers who serve in DSS. So I just feel like there's a lot of things that I would like to understand better about this. We're funding a third party company, which I understand. I know that there's, the last thing is, none of these people have been hired yet. So the reality of the rollout is not going to be probably for several months, one way or another, whether we postpone this now or not. It's not like it would start in October, because none of these people have been hired yet. So, my general sense is, given all of those questions, and I recognize, again, the chair's meeting was very late, and I didn't get this detailed information till very recently to give you time, but I'll just say, for my sake, as much as I support the program, the money and the deliverables are not matching for me right now. I'll leave it to you, Tara, if you want to respond now to my concerns. But, I understand you've had very little time to hear them. So
thank you, Chair Walter. I appreciate your outlining of the questions, and I drafted a email. So I'm going to send the email. I didn't want to send it and be disruptive during this time, but I got it right before. But I can respond to it and hopefully give you a little bit more context in answering the questions. And I'll do it as quickly and concisely as possible. So the program is a 12-month program. The teams would be supporting students and their families throughout the school year. So a lot of the questions that we're having with the schools is in terms of spacing and to make sure that there was access to the school campuses or at least to some school staff that would be assisting in the support of the students over the summer months. But it is projected for them to get support throughout the entire year. And with regards to the 3-month time frame feeling quite limited and asking if it was empirically supported, for this, I wanted to give a little bit of context in terms of how we were able to come up with the pilot. And what we did was that we used pieces of traditional clinical services that are within our system and molded them together to make this program. And one of the services that we use is called home-based crisis intervention services. And what that does is that it is a crisis service for youth that utilizes family systems work. It targeted whatever that one symptom is that is putting the youth at risk of hospitalization. So that's their target. We want to keep you out of the hospital. It's not everything that the youth is struggling with, but it's what's putting them at risk of hospitalization. And for HBCI, it's a clinician that goes in 6 weeks, very intensive, 120 minutes worth of clinical work in the home for that 6 weeks. And so when speaking with the school districts, they didn't want yet another clinical service. Yes, there is a dearth of clinical services, and that is something that our system needs to be able to participate in to take care of. But what they were feeling is that between the additional resources of the ARPA money, they could reinforce their social work staff. They really needed for folks to be able to go into the community. And so this program for the mental health in schools would not necessarily be clinical, but it would be intensive and immerse the dyads would be immersing themselves in the lives of students by doing that same sort of assessment that the HBCI does in the home, but they would also be doing it in the school. They would be doing it at the Boys and Girls Club, wherever the kid is. They're orienting themselves to the life of that youth in the 3 to 6 months that they're with them. The program isn't meant to be long-term. It's meant to be a quick shot in the arm to do an assessment and identify why the student is not able to achieve their goals at school, and then link them to services that are built to be longer term. And those services, a big way for them to be built is to be billable, so that they're sustainable. This is supposed to be a quick, intensive sort of ability to look at globally what someone may be dealing with that is impacting their education.
Thanks. So I guess what, you know, in the scope of services, it never delineates that extensive amount of hours that each caseworker or clinician will provide to the family. And so if it's not in their scope of services, it's hard for us to know that it actually is going to happen.
Right.
So it'd be, you know, I feel like the scope of services in this contract should really specify that. I still, you know, I hear you say 3 months, but then 3 to 6 months. It obviously changes if it's 6 months on how many kids are served versus 3 months. So to have a little bit more clarity as to that, and this, again, if you can address that you had estimated it would actually be 400 kids for a year for this whole time, but the scope of services say 100.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't know if it means edits and corrections to the scope of services, but, you know, what you tell me now sounds great. I just don't see that on this scope of services.
So there's two different issues that are happening here, both of which that can be an opportunity. The fact that it's not billable, it's not licensed, there's no regulation that puts limits on how it is that we perform the service is why I can only say it's 3 to 6 months. It allows for us to dictate, to have the youth's needs dictate how long we're in there for. You know, it gives us flexibility. We don't have anyone to answer to but that family. So you're absolutely correct. if we end up having kids longer than 6 months, then that limits the amount of youth that we would be able to rotate in and out. But that wouldn't be for every youth. There are some kids we're going to be able to get in there, be really intensive, be in and out in 4 weeks. And then there's some kids that are going to need for us to be there 6 months and looking for an extension.
I understand. I guess it's if this is a pilot and we want to know if it's working, we want to know what the real expected goal of how many kids will be served. And by putting 100, like, I don't know if you really mean 100, if you really mean 400, or if you want to pick a number in between. The other thing, if you could, like, at one point, Deputy Executive Contreras talked about it being kind of like, almost like a not to exceed. Like, if they don't provide services, they won't get the money. It's not quite clear how this is going to be paid out. Like, how is it sort of, if you see this many kids, like, what if they don't start for another 5 months in one school? What if they only see two kids? And so how are you tracking that process to assure? So, you know, again, I don't need you to fully answer it now. And especially we could, you know, perhaps by ways and means, but I feel like all of that kind of detail is really, really important to know that we're not just giving this organization this huge chunk of money with a very small, you know, like we want to know if this works and we want to know what working looks like. And I don't feel like it's specific enough in the scope of services of what our true expected deliverables would be so that we know whether we've achieved it. And not necessarily their fault, but like whether, you know, how staffing impacts things and how schools impact things. Mark.
I would just like to recommend that we get the contract to you back by ways and means in a sufficient way that we fix the scope of services. I would say that, you know, you mentioned off the bat that postponing it because the people haven't even been hired, it shouldn't matter and won't delay. They're not going to hire people until we get this contract approved. So if we postpone it, then it will postpone people from getting hired.
I understand. I guess I'm saying to not use the argument that says, oh, it's already September, the school year started, because it's not going to start anywhere near the beginning of the school year, no matter when we pass this. But I'm willing to not postpone it and just, but need to have all of this detail for ways of making.
Yes, I just also agree that I think it is time sensitive. Even though we're into September, and perhaps even more so because we're into September. So I'd like us to pass this out with the idea that these questions can be answered, and that this will be looked at again in ways and means.
Okay, sure. Again, it may very well not start till December, even if we approve it, but. Because they have to hire all these people who are.
And if we don't approve it, then that wouldn't start until January. Each month we push it back here means another month that students go without services.
Understood. So any other comments? If we're getting more information. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Commissioner Rossone.
I'm sorry, there were just two pieces that I wanted for the committee to know. We would be invoicing for services, so they would have to submit an invoice and they only get paid for what it is that they're able to substantiate, they put out in resource to provide the service. So that's one response that I thought you would want to hear. The second is that they have already posted it, started to do interviews for possible applicants. So the ball is rolling, and LaSalle has been in good faith putting out some of these, doing some of these activities in order for the program to start as quickly as possible. And the work with the districts has also undergone.
Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Anything else on this? All right. So again, I will vote in favor of it. Knowing with the expectation that in ways and means we'll have much greater and improved details that if I don't see it, I guess I could not vote in favor of it then. But I, you know, I'm always in favor of the intent of this program. I just, you know, it's a very important one that we need to make sure it's done exactly right. And I appreciate your leadership on it, Tara. I know that you're the best person to be leading the charge. All in favor of resolution 450?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, unanimous. Resolution 451, approving the execution of a contract for 4503 entered into the county. This is expanding the services of access. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Legislator Erner, you have discussion?
I have a point of order. Did we deal with resolution 449?
Yes, that was included with the other transportation ones. We
was part of the block.
Yep.
That you voted against.
The block of 4-4. There was like earlier resolution.
444, 445, 446, and 449.
I see. Okay. All right. And so I guess I voted yes on that, which is fine because that's how I wanted to vote on that. Thank you.
Excellent.
I have no discussion on this.
Okay. Resolution. Anyone else? So the only thing I have, and again, it was just brought up to Deputy Executive Contreras yesterday and Deputy Executive Ryder, is just we've expanded mobile mental health 2 or 3 times, I think, which is fine. I understand that, and that's how it unravels. But it would be very helpful to know in the 2023 budget, like, what does this now cost us? Because it's hard to keep track with each of the different expansions. I know that the expansions of the walk-in are there once we have the crisis stabilization, that'll move, but we're not changing the mobile mental health. So it would just be nice to know not only what does this now cost us in 2023 as it stands, but any other projected expansions, just so that we have a full picture of what our mobile mental health system is. That would be great to have. And I don't mind waiting till Ways and Means just to have that larger picture as well. Any other conversation on 451? All right. All in favor of resolution 451?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Resolution 452, approving 2022 resource allocation plan and authorize intermunicipal agreements with various municipalities for the Youth Bureau. Motion to discuss. Nolan, second. Erner, any discussion? Erner, Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Walter. I'm sorry that I cannot address my questions to Director Dawson, but I had a couple of concerns reading through this. I saw the different agreements with the municipalities list. For example, including my own municipality, lists some workers who are paid under the minimum wage. Do we know if that's legal? Are they considered contractors with the county, or is there an exception because they might be minors, or do we know that that's okay?
I can follow up. I mean, I know this is going to Ways and Means as well. I'm happy to follow up with both Deputy Contreras and I mean, my guess is it's okay because this is an annual resolution that we pass, but it's a good flag, and I'll just make sure that I check in with them.
Thank you. And I don't know, Legislator Erner, if you want to be at Ways and Means when that gets presented. It's a good point, especially if it breaks the policy that we have. Do you want to respond to that, Legislator Erner, before I move to Legislator Nolan?
I did have a follow-up. Yeah, thank you. And I do have reasons to be at Ways and Means, so I'll see you there. At least one town also. The wage is listed and the total for the term is confusing. That's a state form, though, that I'm looking at, so it might be something that we can't directly address. But the OCFS application program budget form, it seems like the different municipalities are not consistent in how they're listing their wages, even though they do break them down by the pay period. It still doesn't quite add up to me. Town of Saugerties was one in particular on page 558 that confused me. That's the only other thing. Thank you.
I was just going to ask for some page numbers. So you're saying 558.
That's in our legislative packet. I can.
I have it. I have the full. So the packet with the backup. You're saying 558 is one example.
Yeah, that's one example. But the here are the towns, and here's the municipalities that had the sub 15 that I could see: City of Kingston, Town of Rosendale, Town of Warsing. At least those three.
We'll look into it.
It has to be the longest backup I've ever seen. And usually the sheriff is the one who gives us like 100 pages. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, I agree that we should look specially, with the change in policy. But my recollection is that some of these are youth programs with minors. Hope that that is the explanation. If it's not, then we need to get it changed. And so I appreciate the careful look.
All right. So you're okay with this being discussed in Ways and Means, Legislator Erner? Okay. So all in favor of Resolution 452?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, unanimous. So, old business, is there updates from the housing working groups? I know that the request was that we would have some draft resolutions by October. That is coming around the corner. So, are we?
Do we count Legislator
Lopez? We lost one of our groups. Okay.
Can we count Legislator Erner's and Legislator Uchitel's resolutions towards that goal?
Sure, although the goal was that we would have draft ones that we could then discuss it so that we could see them all in one picture. But assuming those actually came out of their working groups and with their involvement, sure. We'll start with you two, Legislator Uchitel and Erner, any other updates on your?
Yeah, well, so I'll just say you don't have to assume. Because they did come through the working groups. They didn't originate there, but I mean, where does anything originate? There's a list of topics that we're working towards in the low income group that each represent potential resolutions. And I think we have our next meeting next week. So, that's what we plan on kind of getting through is framing those and putting them into draft form.
Wonderful. Terrific. Legislator Nolan, do you want to talk about?
Yes, we had to cancel our group this last month, but there are projects out around the county that are relevant to our work. And I think maybe for our next meeting, which we have scheduled for later this month, we'll bring up the question of what can we envision in terms of resolutions. We haven't really focused the conversation that way. It's a good focus.
Great. Yeah, it'd be great to have a couple by next month so that we could, because these working groups are not for perpetuity, the idea that they would be completed by the end of this year. So that's great. And does anyone go to Legislator Lopez's working group? And do you know if they are on track with coming up with some draft resolutions?
I did go to the last meeting or part of the last meeting. I guess I don't know the answer to that. I know that there will be another meeting in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. In terms of new business, there are a couple of food insecurity resolutions that are coming forward for us to look at. I believe Legislator Sperry. I will say that the RFP that I worked on with the executive's office on eviction services is its final due date is later this month. They did issue, we had questions, which I provided responses to. I don't know if you saw that, Mark, but I provided the responses to the questions because they have to be there by Friday. In reference to questions or comments that Legislator Erner and Uchitel brought up, an element of this is promoting it and letting people know that these services would be available. That was one of the deliverables, not just providing the legal services, but making sure people are well aware that those legal services exist. And I could say that from the questions that were asked, they're recognizing it because they asked about it covering other people besides just those people who provide the legal services, such as, you know, to doing the outreach and letting people know. So they're recognizing the importance that they can't just offer this service without making sure our constituents know that the service is available. And so hopefully once we have a sense, once the applications are in and we identify, I'm hopeful that next month, if there's no major problems, that we can put in a resolution to fund that and get that started as soon as possible. Any questions on that one? All right, any other new business? Okay, I will take a motion to adjourn. Are you saying goodbye, or do you want to say something?
I wanted to say something, and I don't want to stand in between a motion to adjourn when I know it's been a long meeting.
You're not a long talker, so go ahead.
Okay, I'll be very brief with my remarks, but I really feel compelled to piggyback on something that Director Koppenhaver spoke to during her presentation, which I think is of vital, vital importance. And in the spirit of the receptivity that I've witnessed by both the administration and the legislature to seriously consider taking on more areas of subject matter and responsibility, it is becoming very apparent, I think, to those of us who deal with our aging community around personal care services that while no one can tell the future or predict what's going to happen, you know, the analogy I would make is that if we knew 10 years ago where we would be with the housing crisis, we probably would have implemented much more effort to create affordable housing stock that would have been insulated from the economic dynamics that are leading to a lot of the resolutions that you're considering right now. When it comes to health home aides, DSS does administer the personal care assistance level 1 and level 2 programs, and we are witnessing an incredible crisis in the home health aid industry. It is primarily a privatized industry, and while there is consumer-directed care and that we also make arrangements for our clients who are eligible for personal care level 1 and level 2, we again are facing a lot of challenges with regard to lining up those clients with personal care home aides. And if this is something that we really look at closely, I think it's an area of consideration that we need to contemplate maybe creating, you know, with the health department, with OFA, potentially with DSS, creating a job title for a home health aide with a case manager, with more RNs, and become a county in New York State and maybe in this country that creates a model or sets an example that people can age safely and remain in their homes in Ulster County. Because our population is aging in front of us. And over the next 5-10 years, if we're not able to support those aging individuals in our community, they're not going to be able to remain in their homes safely. And there's really not a lot of other facilities for them to move into. So again, in the spirit that I've seen demonstrated here over the past couple of years, and as we go forward, it might be an area of responsibility that we seriously consider taking on. You know, my longevity with the county is at a point, you know, where I've seen a lot of trends, and I wish I knew as much 20 or 30 and 10 years ago as I try to keep track of now. But I do see this as something on the horizon, and getting out in front of it and maybe creating a part of our workforce that can be responsive. So you can be a home health aide and receive a dignified salary with benefits and be able to do that job with the respect and recognition that it deserves. You know, a lot of people make private arrangements on the side under the radar, and they're not always the safest arrangements. And that's where we become involved a lot of times in adult protective services. So just a cautionary remark, you know, it's not directly under the DSS umbrella, but it's part of something we all do as the human services departments in Ulster County, and our population is going to age. And just like we've demonstrated with other areas of activity and responsibility, we can take this on. We can do something. You know, there's revenue streams. You know, there's the Medicaid programs that are going to be able to pay for portions of the salaries that the home health aides would be getting compensated through. There might be a county share too. You know, I don't know what the numbers would look like, but I really think that rather than waiting 5 years, 10 years, you know, because this is on the horizon. So I really thank you for listening to me for a few minutes.
I disagree with one thing, which is it's not on the horizon, it's here. And I think that, I mean, we already heard from Sue that there's a challenge. And we also know that this is a population of workers who are underpaid and undertreated, and mm-hmm. and who can blame them for not wanting to stay? I think that this is the time. I don't think this is something we should wait on. I think we should really sit down and think about what this looks like and try to get it into the 2023 budget. It's only the beginning of September and we have this opportunity. Sue's not here right now, but Mark is. And I think that we should not only think about how to improve the quality of life and employment of home health aides, but also add to that the conversation about working with Department of Health or whoever to make sure that there's an RN that's available to this population. So I'm committed to supporting something. I think this is one of those years that we're not on this, you know, shoestring. And if there's ever a time to sort of be innovative and creative and really address these issues, that again, it's I'm sure Sue could say this was true 5 years ago. And so like now's the let's start fixing this. And so I'm hoping that Mark, you'll be open and we'll have some conversations about really being cutting edge on how we are taking care of our elderly population.
Yeah. I mean, I'm open to the conversation. I'll say that, you know, being in the middle of the budget process now and having about a month before it's presented all to you, that there are a lot of requests and asks that we're having to balance. And so I get that we're not on a shoestring, but we have to look at everything. I think this is really important. And then what I would say is that, you know, when you talk about 10 years ago, Dennis Doyle was talking about a housing crisis 10 years ago. And it we're now in it. So I get that this is timely conversation. And we are in a crisis when it comes to this. We just have to look at what the best way for us to be involved, if it's bringing these on board or if it's providing assistance to the agency so they can pay more, right? So we just have to, I think, look at that, and I'm willing to work with you all and partnering on that.
Yeah, so let's follow up on that, especially because there are ways of getting reimbursal and everything, and let's figure out a plan. It may not be the perfect, it might not achieve the 100%, but maybe we can get to 80% this year. So let's not forget about that. And Jay will make sure we have a meeting very soon for anyone who's interested in that conversation with Sue so that we can figure out. And if it doesn't get, you know, we always have the room for amendments. So if it didn't work out in yours, then I'll put it in and we'll see where it goes. All right. Thank you. And with that, any other new business? Okay. So all in favor of adjourning?
A motion to adjourn?
Well, I think we made the motion in a second.
Oh, okay. Aye.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.